This is Laura Dierda with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Pat Basu, President and CEO of Cancer Treatment Centers of America based in Boca Raton, Florida. Pat, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Before we dive into the questions, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure, happy to do so. I am a physician by background. I'm a radiologist trained at Stanford, and have spent sort of the past couple of decades leading various healthcare organizations with the goal of building a better healthcare system and transforming the system that cares for so many Americans. So I've started a telehealth company, Doctor on Demand. I've led large organizations such as VRAD and a large division of United Health Group known as Optum Care. And I think I've seen healthcare from a lot of different angles, payer, provider, obviously as a physician, and from some of the more exciting initiatives in healthcare today, including virtual care and value-based care and leveraging patient-centric medicine. So that's what's kind of brought me here. And I've been at Cancer Treatment Centers of America for a little over 2 years now.
Got it. That's fantastic. And obviously, having worked in so many different aspects of healthcare, it just truly brings a great perspective to any kind of discussion. And I'm wondering, especially given your work with value-based care, what do you see as a kind of the most viable models for that coming forward? Do you have any insights on that, just based on some of your previous experiences?
I do. Maybe a couple of lenses, and I think the first question to always ask is, when people refer to value-based care, value to whom? And having once worked at the White House on both healthcare and economic issues on behalf of the president, I would say that value always needs to be determined from the view of the patient. And from the view of kind of the American healthcare system. So, the triple aim of highest quality and greatest access delivered at the most, affordable cost is paramount. And so, I think one of the issues that has plagued the American healthcare system is an opacity of incentives at sometimes the best case, meaning that they're hard to align, or at some points, maybe even incentives that are very misaligned or almost opposite of what you're trying to obtain. And so, I think the best value-based care solutions are ones that, really bring the incentives closer together and align them. So, some of the kind of, provider payer models that are coming together, I think, are really important and really successful. The division that I led for United and Optum had a great amount of success in terms of increasing patient quality, clinical quality, increasing patient satisfaction, but also delivering, affordable care. And currently, I still, work closely with other colleagues in the healthcare system and Medicare to try and bring value-based care solutions that work to the fore while avoiding those that might have, either pipe dream aspirations or kind of wrong aspirations that could actually do harm.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much for going through that with us. Now, going back to Cancer Treatment Centers of America, how are you thinking about growth in the future?
So in several ways, at Cancer Treatment Centers of America, our guiding principle is that it is only and always about the patient. We do practice something that we refer to as the mother standard of care, which is to treat every patient as one's mother or father, as it were, or son, daughter, et cetera. And I think that's just a really important ethos in all of healthcare. So when you expand that and you think about growth, it's how do you deliver that mother standard of care to more patients? And we're thinking about it in a few concrete areas. Cancer is just a horrible plague on on frankly humanity, and certainly, you know, here in America, where one out of three Americans will receive a diagnosis of cancer during their lifetime, and it's the second leading cause of death. So just a huge problem that I believe is the tip of the spear in so many things in American healthcare and the problems that we face. So we want to grow the number of patients that we serve by expanding geographically, mainly through partnerships that we're engaging in. We want to grow through expanding in our virtual and digital platforms. So we have a remarkable care model that allows patients to be seen quickly and comprehensively by their entire care team. So the industry average might be, 28, 29 days for a patient to have a treatment plan. For us, it's less than 5 days. And, they see the entire team, which is great, but how do we put those services virtually? So not only our medical oncologists and our specialists, but also our nurses, our behavioral therapists, our nutritionists onto a virtual platform. So growing geographically through partnerships, growing virtually through our digital platforms. And then the third area would be in the continuity of care. Right now, we are known very much for treating acute cancer, and a lot of providers refer their complex cases to us, but we want to expand with the spectrum of cancer care, including prevention and screening all the way to survivorship. So if you think of treating acute cancer as kind of in the middle, we want to grow by bringing the mother standard of care to the patients that are worried about getting cancer or that are in the process of getting screened for cancer, all the way to those patients who have had cancer at one point in their lives. And there's now 18 million survivors of cancer. And, sadly, once you've had a cancer, you're at an increased risk of developing a second one. And so we want to be able to kind of function across that entire continuity of care.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And, really in thinking about how you're going to expand services, it's very exciting to hear, I'm sure, for everyone, since, as you mentioned, cancer is such a common diagnosis today. And I'm wondering, considering the past year during the pandemic, it affected, organizations and community members in such a different way. How are you, really dealing with some of the ramifications of the pandemic for CTCA and, moving forward? Did it change anything?
Absolutely. I think it would be impossible to look at the past year and COVID-19, the pandemic, and not look at massive changes. So look, briefly, I think like any large provider, and us as the only national provider of oncology, I think we dealt with a lot of the issues that many of my other friends who are CEOs of healthcare organizations dealt with. So everything from procuring, PPE and tests at the beginning of the pandemic to, dealing with, the disruptions in travel or, logistics, all the way to some of the macroeconomic shocks on, labor and other transitions. But specifically, what I would highlight is in cancer, I've spoken about something called the shadow curve, which is this notion that while we have been flattening the curve on COVID, and now thankfully with the production and the actual administration of vaccines, actually developing, personal immunity, and hopefully sometime in the not too distant future, some element of herd immunity through vaccination, cancer has really stood out as a shadow curve that has risen kind of in the background. And what I mean by that is during the height of the pandemic, you won't believe this, but 80 to 90% of various screenings were stopped. So mammograms to detect breast cancer and colonoscopies or other methods to screen or diagnose colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer, every one of these things that was already being underscreened fell by 80%. And that led to what many estimate to be a decrease in cancer, or at least a delay in cancer diagnosis of 30 to 35%. And the reason for that is cancer gets picked up usually in one of two ways. You are screening for it or surveilling, for that possibility of disease, or it gets picked up in another interaction with the healthcare system. And as both of those channels were severely, you know, disrupted, a lot of people now are walking around, you know, with a delayed diagnosis of cancer or an undiagnosis of cancer that otherwise would have been picked up. And it's really tragic because when we catch a cancer early, there is a, we've made such strides that depending on the cancer type, there's a greater than 90% chance likely that we can, you know, treat that patient and they'll do well. But as you fall into stages three and stages four, even for us, as you know, one of the world's leading providers of complex cancer care, and we see a lot of those complex cases, obviously it's a more prolonged, more invasive treatment and not as good as catching the disease early. So the biggest change for us in COVID is has been to really, you know, catch back up with the diagnosis that have been missed. And sadly, we're seeing patients that are coming in with more advanced cancers that likely would have been picked up at stage one had they been, you know, diagnosed 6 months ago. So we've got an entire effort dedicated to helping screen and diagnose and absolutely continue to treat complex cancers as they sadly are coming in more and more now.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. Now, what keeps you up at night?
You know, so just honestly, I think the biggest thing that keeps me up at night is I tell my team a lot that we wear multiple hats, right? We're healthcare professionals, we're healthcare leaders, we care and heal people for a living, but we're also members of society. We are, you know, proud, patriotic Americans. And I would say this even if I had not, you know, previously worked at the White House, but the tension, the divisiveness, in our society right now, and in particular, the attack on sort of data and facts and truth, probably is the biggest thing that keeps me up, and it manifests itself in so many ways. But, you know, when you look at one of the greatest inventions in medical history, the vaccine itself, let alone, you know, the incredible testament to science and medicine to develop a vaccine so efficacious, so safe, and so rapidly, and to have, you know, people, you know, spread lies or mistruths or politically pander, you know, against, you know, vaccines or against masks, you know, to try and trick people. I think it's unethical. I think it's horrible. I think it's un-American. And so that, number one, it affects all of us and it makes delivering healthcare a lot harder. So that's number one at the top of the list. You know, number two is just given the disruption that we've all gone through with COVID, I'm a big believer in systematic processes. You know, a great system can deliver a great outcome, even if, you know, you don't have the best people or the right things, but a bad system that doesn't have repeatability and standardization to it can really lead to errors. And the American healthcare system pre-COVID, as you know, was one that was known to be not a good system. It was known to be fragmented. It was known to have a lot of variation. Well, that's just only been compounded during COVID. And so it worries me. You know, we're far from a well-oiled machine as an American healthcare system, and COVID has only gunked that up worse, whether that's disruptions in supply chain or disruptions in processes or fragmentation of care further, or the delays in care, which I spoke of, that's made an already bad problem worse. So those are probably two of the things that I think, you know, keep me up at night. And maybe the third, just while we're on it, is, you know, to take our eye off of finishing the job on this pandemic and getting people, you know, fully vaccinated so we can, you know, have some level of return to normalcy faster rather than later. Those are probably three big things that worry me.
Absolutely. And it seems like something that, you know, really would impact the larger American healthcare system. So thank you so much for going through those. Now, before we wrap up our conversation, I was wondering, could you share three trends or issues that you're following most closely in healthcare today?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, one trend would be just large shifts in the financing of American healthcare. So as we know, you know, there's been a large shift in Americans going into Medicare, going into Medicare Advantage, going into Medicaid. And so just anytime there's a shift in the way Americans get their health insurance, it has, you know, dramatic effects on the patient, dramatic effects on providers, and dramatic effects on kind of the nation's, you know, healthcare delivery system at large. So I think that's definitely, you know, a big one. Number two is one that we're really leading here at CTCA, which is precision medicine and personalized medicine. And so everything that goes into that, whether it's, you know, genomic testing or the use of AI and big data to, you know, derive insights and lead to diagnoses earlier or more effective therapies and cures, I think is a you know, tremendously, you know, positive trend if we can harness it correctly and use it correctly. And then I think a third, you know, certainly would be in, you know, we talked about earlier, but in value-based care and the way care gets delivered, you know, and I guess somewhat related to kind of point number one. So, but if point number one was more traditional shifts in American insurance, I guess this third point, this third trend would be really much more along the lines of, you know, pay for quality, pay for performance, pay for outcomes, you know, downside and upside risk in payments would be a third. By the way, the fourth one, just for what it's worth, would be consolidation. There is a massive, massive amount of consolidation going on in healthcare amongst providers, amongst payers, and it's really, really dramatically altering the landscape in the way patients get care and the way they access care. So, you know, those are probably four big ones that we track pretty closely at the macro level.
Thank you so much for joining me on this discussion today. This has been really fascinating, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
It's always a pleasure. I look forward to it as well. Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to discussing better ways to continue to make a better healthcare system in the future. So thanks for having me.